We're up to the 29th chapter. Chaftet. And we'll dedicate our learning to Karl Chaim ben Meir Haber. Mizmor le David, havu l'Adonai, b'nei elim, havu l'Adonai, kavod va'oz. The following song was composed by David HaMelech, the following praise. And David says, havu l'Hashem, give before Hashem, b'nei elim, you, the sons of the powerful ones. Havu l'Hashem, what should you give Hashem? Give before Hashem, kavod, honor, va'oz, and might. Praise before him, discuss God's honor and God's might. Who is this verse talking to? So, one understanding is that the verse is talking to the angels. The Targum says, B'nei Elim are Kitei Malachaya B'nei Elim, the groups of angels, the sons of the powerful ones, whatever that means. Ben could also mean the one who has, like Bar Mitzvah, Ben Mavet. The Metzuda says that B'nei Elim is a reference to Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the sons of the powerful ones, the sons of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And here, Chazal say that this is the source for the fact that we say Avot, the fact that we say the first blessing of Shemona Esrei, that's derived from here, that we stand in prayer and the first thing we do is we say, I'm not the first one here. I'm not inventing this connection between me and Hashem. I'm reinstating the fact that my connection dates all the way back to Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. We begin Shemona Esrei by saying, Hashem, Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu. And the God of our forefathers, Elokei Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. So David HaMelech is about to describe how we should give praise. So David HaMelech says, Havu l'Hashem, first of all, remember whose son are you. I am the son of the powerful ones of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Havu l'Hashem kavod va'oz. From here our sages derive that we say gvurot, that we discuss God's might. Right? We begin with Elokeinu Elokei Avoteinu. The next blessing begins, Ata Kipo. We describe God's might. God is going to resurrect the dead. He brings rain. God gives us sustenance, etc. Havu l'Adonai kivot shemo, hishtachavu l'Adonai behadrat kodesh. Give Hashem the honor of His name. And this is a reference to Kedusha. After Atagibo, we say Atakadosh, Vishimcha Kadosh. You're holy, your name is holy. Whenever we start discussing God's name, I'm at a quandary. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it means every day I say it in Shemona Esrei, Atah Kadosh v'Shimcha Kadosh. I don't know what it means every day I say it in Shema, Baruch Shem Kevod Malchuso L'Olam V'Ed. I don't know what Shem Kevod Malchuso means. I have some understanding. It's Ma'akev and Kavanah. It's one of the things you have to have Kavanah for. But I'm still waiting to have a better understanding. Should I tell you the little bit I don't understand? Okay. What's a name? There's the person, there's his name. Name could change. If I have this name today, so that's what I'm identified by. If you want to single out this person as opposed to someone else, the way you identify, the way you limit a person, I'm referring to so-and-so and not anyone else, is by using their name, right? So name is a way of defining, or more accurately, a name is a way of limiting reference. Clear? Okay, so when we discuss God's name, it would seem we are discussing what we perceive as God's actions, God's revelations to us. Meaning, we use names for Hashem. What are we referring to with those names? We're referring to a limited aspect of Hashem. Meaning, we say Hashem who is potent, Elokim. We say Hashem who is omnipotent, we say El. We say Hashem who rules the world, we use the Shem Adnut. Each one is a reference to our perspective. That's a name. And even that, we say, is great. Even that is limitless. Even that is endless. So give to Hashem, kvod shemo, the honor of His name. So now you guys understand as much as I do, but I think something's missing. We say the tetragrammaton, yud kei vav kei, so that's a name. What does it mean? Hove is present. When you add the yud, So then it's active, future, present. Which one is it? Future, present? Ah, that's God. Past, present, future, active creation, that's all Hashem. That's a tetragrammaton. It's so to speak, includes everything that exists. Hoveh, and you add to that the Yud, which is an active Hoveh, right? And that's the Yud Kei Vav Kei is a reference to, so to speak, active creation, and past, present, future. Now, if you think I know what I'm talking about, I don't, but I'm just trying to translate a little bit what the Rishonim say, what I understand the Rishonim mean to say. So, David HaMelech says over here, give the honor of Hashem's name. Speak before Hashem, give forth the honor of Hashem's name. And that's what we say in Shmoneh Esrei, Atah Kadosh V'Shimcha Kadosh. We discuss that God's name is holy.
Doesn't Shem also mean purpose? Like Shem Ma'at HaSev Torah Lishma? Matalah?
Could be, I hear. I'm not sure what you're saying and I'm saying are contradictory, if you think about it. But we did discuss when we were learning the Drashot Haran in the end of his first Drasha, we pointed out over there that the word Shem also means potent being. No, it was in the Drashot HaRamban. Towards the end of the Drasha, Torat Hashem Tmima, the Ramban discussed that there is a Shem, and we said that the Rambam too, in his description of the mitzvah to know that God exists, he describes it as a mitzvah Leida Sheyesh Shem. We have to know that there is an omnipotent being. Shem also means a potent being. And you could see the Rishonim's commentary in the beginning of Bereishis where it says, V'naselanu Shem. In the Tower of Babel, it says, they said, let's unite and make for ourselves a Shem. What does the Shem mean over there? So over there, that's where it's discussed. Okay, back to the Pasuk. Avu Lashem kevot shemo, give before Hashem the honor of His name. Hishtachavu Lashem behadrat kodesh. Bow before Hashem. What does hadrat kodesh mean? Hadrat, hadar, vehadarta p'nei zaken, in a place that we glorify His holiness. This is the concept that Sfaradim, by the way, are better at this than Ashkenazim, that a shul has to be beautiful. Even a poor kehillah of Sfaradim, when they build a shul, you walk in, you say, wow, the chairs, everything's beautiful. You walk into an Ashkenazi shul, they could all be millionaires, and you sit on these little wooden chairs, and it's a fault. We have to learn from the Sfaradim. We're wrong. They're right. Hadrat Kodesh.
From, like, the lavish churches and stuff they were surrounded by.
Okay.
Like, okay, we're just going to stick it in someone's face.
You could say, it is quoted in the Ramah, that throughout the period that we were in Europe, the church forbade us from building lavish shuls. There's a halacha that we learned from the Pasuk in Mishlei. L'romem bet Elokeinu, that the shul is supposed to be the highest building in town. And when you go to yeshuvim that were constructed with the rabbi's guidance, you'll see that the shul is really on top of the hill. It's the highest building in town. That's Allah and Shulchan Aruch. The shul is supposed to be the highest building, and that ensures that the city won't be destroyed. It's a segula. Rav said, one second. So the Ramah says, we here in Europe, we're lucky if we get to leave the shul intact. The Gentiles around us, they don't let us build a shul above ground level. We have to go down to basements. He doesn't say basements, but he says we're lucky if they don't destroy whatever we build. We cannot fulfill this halacha. So the halacha basically says you're not allowed to build your house higher than the shul. So now do everyone have to live? Do we say everyone has to build basement apartments because the shul is so low? So we say not that way. We can't fulfill this halacha. So you're right. There is an element where our neighbors, our non-Jewish neighbors, had an impact on our capacity to build beautiful shuls. But that's no excuse today. We can't keep up with, that's what we saw 100 years ago when we were in Europe. Us Ashkenazim have no excuse. We have to put our money together and build beautiful shuls just like the Sfaradim. Or better, but that's this pasuk. Bow before Hashem be'adrat kodesh, in the glory of holiness. It's supposed to be glorified. And it's not only talking about shuls, it's also talking about the way we approach shul. A person is supposed to have a special garment when he comes to daven. A person, he doesn't have to wear a tie and a jacket, but he's supposed to have a special clean garment he wears. Now, these halachot, very often we learn them. We think for a second, that's interesting, and then we continue with our lives. If we'd ever stop and really implement this, I had friends in America's Rav who did this. Came time to daven, they'd go change their shirt, wash their hands, come daven. You'd feel different. it's what we discussed, that our connection to mitzvot is very often affected greatly by how we embellish the mitzvot, the little things we do to make the mitzvot special by us. And this is what we learn. There's one more halacha that we derive from here. The Gemara says, "Al tikri be'adrat kodesh ela becherdat kodesh," that there's supposed to be awe. You're not supposed to talk in a shul business or all your private matters. There's supposed to be awe. You're walking into a shul. There's supposed to be cherdat kodesh, a certain awe, trembling. I'm standing in the presence of something holy. You know, there's a halacha that if someone walks through a shul, you tell them put on a yarmulke. Even the Sephardim whose custom is not to wear yarmulke. You walk into a shul, you wear yarmulke. Even if you're not going to daven anything, you wear yarmulke. So I saw this halacha and I thought, okay, but today, you know, people don't understand. You have to be more giving. You have to be more liberal. Liberal, I mean, in a true sense. And I was in a Beis Medrash where someone else was the head of the Beis Medrash. And the person who owned the Beis Medrash, who owned the plot of land, was a Jew who was not yet observant of mitzvot. And he came to check on certain pipes that had broken. So the head of the Beis Medrash didn't know it was the owner. He didn't know he was sitting in his shul. He told, the guy walks in, he says, "One second, I'll get you a yarmulke." So the man's walking into the territory he owns, and the rabbi of the shul tells him, "Wait, I'll get you a yarmulke." And I'm sitting there on the side, and I feel like telling him, you know, he owns this place. We're here, we're renting it from him. But I figured, well, I'm going to tell him. Okay. He went, he got him a yarmulke. Ever since that day, every time the owner comes in, he brings his own yarmulke along, he wears a yarmulke. Sometimes we have to be open. And the halacha says, chirdat kodesh. You're walking into a shul, there's supposed to be a certain awe. I'm standing in the place of something holy. So this is something that other people could understand as well. That's the, you see also by the kosel, they give out the free kippot. That's this concept. Yeah?
Where I work, there's a small room with Nisim. It's a body room. And the little workers are right there. So I saw once a man both like me, but maybe comes a little bit less clean. He's putting up special covers with the bones on his butt and he's guiding the prayers.
That's a different halacha. Now that's a halacha that it says pochech. Someone pochech literally means someone who's so poor that his clothes are tattered and you could see through his clothes. So we say that some opinions in halacha say that includes short sleeves. So that's why some people say cover your arms when you go before the teva. But that's okay. Pasuk gimel. Kol Adonai al hamayim. El hakavod irim Adonai al mayim rabim. Hashem's voice, it traverses all waters. That's we're describing the might of Hashem's voice. One understanding is this is a reference to the Yam Suf. One understanding is that this is a reference to the fact that Hashem's voice will instill awe ultimately in the nations throughout, so it'll traverse all the waters. Kel HaKavod, Hashem, who is honor, Hirim. Over here the question is, what's Hirim? If it's in the past tense, then it's a reference to a historical occurrence, potentially Kriyas Yamsuf. If it's really talking about the future, so then that's Hirim is a borrowed term. The Navi often speaks about the future in past tense, because he witnesses it as though it happened. The whole Megillah Seicha is said years before the destruction, right? It's said years, many years before the destruction. And yet, the prophet Jeremiah discusses the city as though it's already been destroyed in past tense. Echa yasheva badad. How has this city sat alone? Past tense, sat alone. Because in the prophet's eyes, he already saw it happen, so he's talking past tense. And that's why kel hakavod hirim, Hashem, from our perspective, will make his voice thunder out. But in the prophet's terminology, David HaMelech speaks about it in the past tense. Hashem al mayim rabim. Hashem will make his voice heard to over many waters, to many nations. And the nations are very, very often referred to as bodies of water. Just like the water can wash things down, so too they, so to speak, wash things down. Just like the waters are limited by the sands, so too Hashem limited the nations that they shouldn't completely destroy the Jewish people. Kol Adonai bakoach, kol Adonai behadar. Hashem's voice comes out with great strength. Hashem's voice comes out with great glory. It's ultimately going to give glory to his people. Kol Adonai shover arazim vayishaber Adonai et arzei halevanon. Hashem's voice will break the tall cedar trees, and this is a reference to the kings of these nations. And Hashem will even break down the cedar trees of Lebanon, which is in the time of Tanakh. That's the place where they had beautiful tall cedar trees growing. Very often we refer to Arzei Lebanon, the cedar trees of the Lebanon. Yeah.
And when you're saying that the trees are referring to kings.
Yeah.
So when he says even the cedar trees of Lebanon, that should mean something special.
It means even the tall cedar trees, even the great leaders. Throughout Tanakh, cedar trees, Alzeim are leaders, Alzei Levanon are the especially strong leaders, the especially tall trees. Vayalkidem kimo egel, Levanon v'siryon, kimo ven reimim. And Hashem will cause them, so to speak, to dance. How do you make logs dance? When they tremble, when they're traveling, they bounce up and down. So that's what the Navi is calling. They will dance. These cedar trees will dance, so to speak. They will tremble in fear. Kimo egel, like a young calf. Levanon v'siryon, these great kings will tremble, will dance. Kimo ven re'emim, like young re'emim. What is a re'em? A re'em is some kind of creature that is mentioned throughout the Tanakh. It's a creature that Chazal tell us would consume mountains. David HaMelech, Chazal say, was once climbing a great mountain, and as he was climbing, the mountain started moving, and he realized there was a re'em, this creature that Chazal referred to. We don't know what they're talking about, but Chazal referred to this huge creature that looks like mountains, and really these mountains are all one big creature. I don't know more than that. That's what the Medrash says. The Medrash discusses one such animal and one such bird. There's a bird that when it lays an egg, it destroys a number of cities. It falls down from the sky and destroys a number of cities. The egg of this bird. But I don't know if Chazal meant literally. This goes back to our earlier discussion of Midrashim in general. Also Re'imim. I mean, it says in the Torah, V'kalni Re'im Karnav. His horn is like the horn of a Re'im. So now we're talking about Ben Re'imim. I think it's much, much bigger. If David HaMelech was climbing it and he thought it was a mountain. Maybe, or else maybe this is all a midrashic sense.
Big bird?
This is not the big bird. This is the big animal.
No, I know what I'm saying. Is the big bird that is? Is that the big bird you're talking about? That's not the big bird I know of.
I don't know what the ziz is.
There's a man, just like, I forget where it is. They're climbing like the cliffs of the ziz or whatever. I'll have to look at that.
Yeah.
Is there any element of references to the future in the machine? Because what would make sense in my mind would be some kind of modern day bomb that would be a bird, and the bomb would drop to the atomic, the egg would drop the atomic bomb and explode several cities. So is there any element of reference to the future in the machine, or that's not the case?
It could be.
Because as I said before, this message is obvious for the future.
Right. Right, that's the pshat we're learning right now is that it's going on the future. Rashi, that goes with the pshat in the past tense, it's going on the time of Kriyat Yamsuf, the time of the giving of the Torah. We're going with the pshat that's going on the future. There will be a time when Hashem does all of this. This is relevant to us. This is a chapter we say all the time.
It's also said in Hashem will do it again after Yom Yamsuf. Do it again something that the nation will see.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
So I've heard that it's suggested that there's certain elements of exaggeration that very often are used in the Midrashim and in Tanakh itself.
We had a half hour discussion of exaggeration in Midrashim earlier.
And I've heard that that was also the style in the Middle East to pass on very often a certain point across. And until today, you see it in the culture, very often. So
the Gemara discusses when do we say it's a guzman, when not, and the Rishonim discuss something that needs to be quantified. Otherwise, everything you could say it's an exaggeration.
But weren't the animals supposed to be bigger back then? Like, am I just imagining having read this somewhere? Like people were back big. Like it says, isn't it? People were bigger back then too.
Yeah, did he push David with the giants?
Well, not just that, but the giants, like, they were especially big, but like that's why Noah's ark was like probably bigger than we imagined, because everything was bigger back then. I mean, am I just misremembering something?
You see that the giants were exceptional, like the Rambam writes. The Torah points out exceptions.
We have the Hulk who lifted up the whole mountain.
Right, but he was an exception. To say everyone was bigger, there is, the Chazon Ish says, and others say, that everything in the world is relative, meaning we assume that if people grew bigger, then the plants grew bigger, and everything grows together. There is such an assumption. But to say that everyone was bigger then, we see they were the exception. Unless you'll tell me, well, Moshe Rabbeinu was 10 amos tall. So you see, people were taller. Maybe a 20-foot man is pretty tall, right? That's Moshe Rabbeinu's height. If we're to take that literally, then that's pretty tall, right? On the other hand, it would seem exceptional, because then you have to say that whatever.
I
don't know. Right, there are sources that would indicate what he's saying.
But on the other hand, Abe Lincoln was 6'4", so it's recent.
I don't know. Pasuk Zayin. So we're describing that tremendous voice of Hashem. Either we're talking about the voice at the time God gave the Torah, which all the nations heard, or we're talking about the voice that's still to come. Kol Adonai chotzev lahavot ish. Hashem's voice splits burning fires, which could be flames of fire, which could mean the time of Matan Torah. That it says that when Hashem said the Ten Commandments, so there was a flame that came out every time Hashem said the commandment, and then it, so to speak, burnt through the luchos, what Hashem was saying. That's one medrash, but that's going with the past tense. And the future tense, that's talking about the future, that there's going to be all kinds of lightning that'll scare the nations. Again, you could say that's laser, you could say whatever you want, if we're going to give our own interpretation. But who knows? We don't know. Kol Adonai yachil midbar, yachil Adonai midbar kadesh. Hashem's voice causes even the people dwelling in the desert to be scared, and even the desert of Kadesh, which is a huge area, still people won't see what's happening. They won't see anything, but the mere voice that they hear will send shivers down their spine. They'll be scared. Kol Adonai yecholel ayalot vayechesof ye'arot uvheichalo kulo omer kavod. Hashem's voice yecholel will place fear, like chil. Chil is fear. Ayalot. Ayalot are the female rams. Vayechesof ya'arot, Hashem will make the forests seem barren. He'll uncover them, because their trees will be knocked down because of Hashem's voice. So the field, the trees are barren. So then the vayechesof, yechesof means to uncover, to reveal. The ya'arot are the forests. Uvehechalo, and whoever comes to Hashem's house, to Hashem's Beit HaMikdash, then people will say, wait a second, now I understand. I don't have to have awe for the cedar trees of Lebanon. I don't have to have awe for all these kingdoms. I don't have to be in awe of the beautiful forests I see in Switzerland. So what is beautiful in this world? When they come to Heichalot, to Hashem's home, kulo mer kavod, then whoever comes there will say, ah, this is honor. Now I understand what honor is. I used to think, you want to see honor? Go see the Vatican. I used to think, you want to see something honorable? Go see the Queen of England. I used to think, you want to see honor, you want to see dignity, you want to see respect, go to Switzerland. No. Now I understand what real honor is. Uveichalo, when I come to Hashem's home, kulo omer kavod, whoever comes will say, ah, now I understand what kavod is. And that's why we have a din that says, if you have the opportunity to see a king today, go see. If Bush comes to town, go see. Go see his royal brigade. Go see how everyone travels before him, after him, Air Force One, the policemen, they fly in just to ride in front of him. Because when you see it, you'll think, wow, that's honor. Look, for one little man, They have a whole brigade. You have a whole. They fly in their motorcycles, the American motorcycles, with their flags and their gas and everything they need. You know how many airplanes they fly in, just so that when he travels, he has his limousines going in front and in back. And you look at it, say, psh, that's amazing. Tells us the halacha, go and look at it, so that when you'll see real honor, you'll be able to see the difference. See it, and then you'll be able to appreciate better when real honor comes to the scene. Adonai lamabul yashav vayeshev Adonai melech leolam. Just like when there was the flood, it was clear that Hashem was alone. Everything was destroyed, and then everyone understood that God was ruling the world. Hashem lamabul yashav. When there was the flood, Hashem, so to speak, sat on his throne, and there was no one there to say, no, my God is bigger, my idol can protect me. Hashem brought down a flood, and it was clear to the world that Hashem ran the world. That's Hashem lamabul yashav. At the time of the flood, Hashem could sit on his throne, and there was no ma'aririn, there was no one who said anything. Vayeshev Hashem, and so too will be in the times of the Mashiach. Hashem alone will sit as king of the world. No one will have any thoughts to believe in any idol or any other being. Melech le'olam, king for eternity. Everyone will come to the recognition that Hashem is the one running the world. Adonai oz le'amo yitein. Adonai yivarech et amo v'shalom. Hashem then will give the strength to his nation. And you think, if you have strength, so whoever starts with me, I'll wipe them clean, right? I have all the strength. Hashem gave me the strength. So David HaMelech says, and not only will they have strength, but there will no longer be war. Hashem will bless them with peace. So you tell yourself, well, if there's peace, what do I need strength for, right? So I'll leave you with that question.